My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Having unexplained experiences for most of my childhood, I began to explore and research this in my teens and early adult life. Much of this research was done by acquiring books on metaphysics, alternative spirituality, psychic phenomenon, mystery schools, and related topics. The majority of these books were published by a company out of Minnesota called Llewellyn. What I did not know at the time was that the publisher, Carl Llewellyn Weschke, was responsible for much of the renaissance of these teachings and their acceptance by a wider audience. Who was Carl Llewellyn Weschke, and how did he birth this metaphysical publishing giant? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Melanie Marquis, knows this story well. Melanie Marquis is the founder of the United Witches Global Coven and the organizer of Denver Pagans. She's written for Circle, Pentacle, and the American Tarot Association. Melanie's books, published by Llewellyn, include The Witch's Bag of Tricks, A Witch's World of Magic, Beltane, and Lunasa. She's the co-creator of the Modern Spellcasters Tarot and the co-author of Witchy Mama. She lives in Denver, Colorado. Her website is melaniemarquis.com, and that's MelanieMarquis.com. And she joins me this evening to discuss her latest book, Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Melanie Marquis. Good evening, Melanie.
Hi, Victor. Thanks for having me on tonight.
So wonderful to be with you again. The last time I interviewed you was actually when my wife and I were doing Love and Romance Radio a few years ago, and you had come on Halloween to talk about Halloween and also about love magic, and that was a great interview. We really enjoyed it.
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
And I've had the pleasure of interviewing you also in some of my other previous incarnations doing the interview work. But for our new listeners to you on Om Times Radio, please share about your path and the world of magic, and that's magic with a K.
Well, I do believe in a world of magic. And what I mean by that is I believe that everything in the universe is interconnected. And what I call the connecting force is what I think of as magic. I believe that as conscious beings, we're able to utilize that connecting force and manipulate that and alter that in order to not only apply our consciousness in ways that helps us evolve as individuals and as a species, but we can also apply our consciousness in ways that helps affect immediate changes in our daily lives.
So in essence, what you're saying is that magic with a K is intention over the energy and the special forces around us.
Yes, many people describe it as creating change in the universe through one's willpower.
Now, I mentioned in your introduction that you're the founder of the United Witches Global Coven. Now, many people get the misunderstanding of the word coven. What actually is a coven?
Well, a coven can be described as any group of working witches. It can be as close as a family or a more loose-knit group, an organization of different witches that practice magic together. And you know, just like some people like to go to church groups because you get benefits from having a community of people to work with, to share your spiritual goals with, to learn from one another. So it's the same way in the world of magic that many witches do prefer to work in a coven, just to have companionship and people to learn from and to practice with.
Is there a special structure to a coven, a number of people or that type of thing?
Well, yes, but there's so many different styles. There's not a standard. You know, I think traditionally many covens have 13 people, and there's often a high priest or high priestess at the head of it, but there are covens of all shapes and sizes and all types of structures these days.
What may the average person do to bring a little magic with a K into their lives?
Well, I think one thing is realizing that most likely you already do some form of magic. Like lots of people might carry a lucky charm, or you might wish on a star, or even something simple, just like noticing the energies of the world around you, be it in the trees or in the soil or in the stones that you come across and the animals and people you meet every day. All that to me is magic. Our lives are an opportunity to exchange energy with others and to absorb the energies of the world around us and to experience nature. So I think one way to bring more magic into your world is just to realize that we do have this power, and that our emotionally charged thoughts do have an effect on the world. So being aware of that, you can use that to your advantage instead of to your detriment.
You know, I got back on my path in my late 30s, and I found that after taking a meditation class, I walked outside and I looked at a tree that I'd looked at probably 1,000 times before. And I started to see this glow, this energy around this tree, and recognized that I was actually seeing the aura of the tree. And for me, it was like a huge reawakening.
Yes, it's real. I mean, everything in the universe, it does have energy fields. And this is proven scientifically. And, you know, there's actually a real science to magic. And it seems like the more scientific discoveries that are made, we realize the more real that this inner world, this inner aspect of things is. And that is really all I mean by magic, is just being aware of that inner aspect of the world.
Let's talk a little bit about your previous Llewellyn books. Why don't you share with our listeners some of the titles and what they were about?
Well, my first book was The Witch's Bag of Tricks, and I was inspired to write this book because after interviewing lots of authors and experienced witches and other practitioners of magic, I found that a common problem was people can kind of feel like they're in a spiritual rut. You know, you get used to what you're doing, and after a while, you just don't put the same energy into it. You know, when we first discover any kind of new spirituality or spiritual technique, it's so exciting and it's so thrilling because we're learning, we're discovering. But then once we reach a point where we've already, you know, we might feel like, oh, well, we know it all, then we kind of, you know, it loses its luster because we lose that energy and enthusiasm and we can get caught in a rut. So I wrote The Witch's Bag of Tricks to try to give people ways, whatever your spiritual path might be, to question your own beliefs and take those beliefs further and to just take the next steps down your own spiritual path, whatever that might be, to kind of shake up the rut and discover that we can all still learn new things.
And what about A Witch's World of Magic?
Well, that book is I really like that book a lot. In that book, I surveyed lots of different magical practices from around the world, from all types of different cultures, from European to African and Caribbean. And what I tried to do was show the underlying principles behind the different magical methods that you see from these different cultures and places, with the idea in mind that if we can find common theories, that, you know, we can learn from those common theories and from those common truths that we see come up and utilized again and again around the world.
And Beltane.
Well, the Beltane book and the other one in that series that I did was the Lunazid title. And that's part of a book of titles from Llewellyn called the Sabbat's Essential Series. And it's about the pagan holiday of Beltane, which is May Day on May 1st. It's a springtime celebration. So it talks about the history of that day and the traditions and offers some new ideas for new ways to practice and make crafts and some recipes and things like that.
And Lunasa.
That's the one in the same series, and that one talks about the first fall, the first harvest festival that's held on August 1st. That's another of the major pagan holidays. And again, it talks about the history and shares some modern ideas for practices as well as old ideas for practices. These holidays are important to many pagans because we use these to kind of mark the seasons and mark seasonal changes throughout the year. I think that helps people to just be more in tune with the flow of nature rather than to swim against those tides by taking the time to realize, you know, oh, well, the fall is here. This is it. You know, the trees outside have a different energy to them. Animal behavior changes with the seasons. And we as human animals are no different. We're also affected by seasonal changes. So it's important to mark these, I think, in our lives. It just helps us attune better and feel more harmonious with the earth.
And what about Witchy Mama?
Well, that book is a book that I wrote with my dear friend, Emily Francis. And that's a book that we wrote to hopefully give mothers-to-be and new mothers more hope and inspiration and ideas for really embracing that time of motherhood and early motherhood and even preparing to become pregnant. Because so often we do take those years and times for granted. We get caught up in the struggles and the frustrations. And before you know it, it's too late. Your kids are all grown up. So we wanted to hopefully inspire people to be able to enjoy their motherhood to the maximum while they can, while their kids are still young, and to be able to embrace the magic of motherhood.
And do you give them
rituals?
There's
lots of little tricks in there for, you know, reducing stress and soothing bedtime worries and things like that, little magic tricks for the mother.
and rituals to prepare for birth, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Melody Marquis. She's here to talk about her new book, Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. And we'll be back with more of Melody after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Tune in to The Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World, with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Melody Marquis. She's the author of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, the pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. Melody, what inspired you to write about the life of Carl?
Well, I was fortunate enough to have corresponded with Carl Llewellyn Weschke for about 8 years before his passing. And during that time, we became very close friends, talking about magic and books, astrology, life, relationships, all sorts of different things. And when he passed away, I wanted to help continue to get his message out there to the world. And one of his core messages was that he was very, very inspired to help people become more than they are. He was a big believer in evolution and that it's every person's individual responsibility to evolve and become more than we are. And, you know, to be able to be active participants in the creation of the universe. He was a firm believer in that. So I really wanted to tell that story and to just get his story out there and to hopefully inspire people that they can do more too. His story is very inspiring, how he built up the company. And you know, one thing that I found very inspiring about Carl was that his first book didn't come out until he was 78 or 79 years old.
Wow.
This is the age most people, you know, we think, you know, I'm 42 and sometimes I feel like, well, gosh, I can't start over with this or that because I've already come this far doing this path or whatever, you know. And often we can feel like that, like it's too late to try something new. But, you know, here's a man that every day of his life he gave his all and did his very best and did all he possibly could to help further the causes that he believed in life and help, you know, spur his passions forward in the world. And he never quit doing that up to the day he died. He was working on books and writing and doing all he could. And he just continuously reinvented himself through the years. And I just find that very inspiring. And I'm hoping that by sharing this story that other people will be inspired to fulfill their own dreams and do what they can do.
Looking at his photo on the cover of the book, he looks like a very gentle and grandfatherly soul. Was that his nature?
Yes, I think so. And in fact, one of the headlines I came across in my research called him a great bearded sage, and another one called him a well-groomed Father Christmas.
Yeah,
I think
both
of those descriptions are very apt, because while he did have a very commanding presence, he just radiated this great power and authority. He's very gentle and very loving and very compassionate. So it was a powerful force of love that people felt all around him.
What was it like to work for Llewellyn Publishing over those years? What was your sense about the way that Carl would work with the authors that came to him?
It's wonderful. Llewellyn really is like a family. And I think that's one thing people will take away from my book, is realizing that family spirit of Llewellyn has been there from the start and it continues to be there, you know, in spite of it's a hugely successful worldwide company. Now, you know, millions of dollars in sales every year, it still has this family quality and family feel. Carl always described working with his authors as a partnership. He didn't see it as his authors worked for him. He saw it as that he worked with the authors. And he did work closely with many authors, helping to develop book ideas and just inspire people to do their best.
Now, what was Carl's early life like, and how was he inspired to study metaphysics and the occult?
Well, his upbringing was actually both traditional and unusual, because he went to a private school for boys in St. Paul, Minnesota. But he also, and you know, he spent some time in the city in St. Paul. And then his father also had a lot of land in Wisconsin where he had different orchards of fruit trees. So the family spent their summers and weekends there. It was called Hazel Hills Farm. So Carl grew up driving tractors around the orchards and running through the woods, exploring nature, looking for bugs and rocks and things like that. But his parents were also unusual in that they had a belief in telepathy, and there was also a close neighbor that was a gifted medium. So he was always around these discussions of different metaphysical topics like this. And his grandfather, his beloved grandfather, who Carl just adored, was named Charles Weschke. And he was actually the vice president of the American Theosophical Society for many years. So his grandfather actually gave Carl the journals from the Theosophical Society that had articles about all manner of metaphysical topics. And Carl was actually reading these journals before starting kindergarten.
Wow.
So that really sparked his interest. And then I think in about first or second grade, he decided that he would build his own telescope so that he could study the stars, because he had gotten into astrology and astronomy also. So he was just really kind of always grew up around it and always had that information available to feed his mind and interests.
So his family was an inspiration.
Yes.
And they brought to him many of the things that later became part of his life.
Yes, and they were very encouraging in their children being individuals. They didn't push any of their children into following their parents' beliefs or any other particular thing. Individuality was very honored in their household. So Carl was very much into philosophy and spirituality. So he was the main one of the kids that really got into those discussions with his parents, but they would practice little games of telepathy and psychic skill and things like that when he was growing up.
Something we've discussed on other programs, and I think it's important to bring in at this point, is when a parent finds that their child has special gifts or abilities, how do you recommend they go about nurturing that child and bringing those out?
Well, I would recommend just, first of all, letting the child know that they're not, that there's nothing wrong with them, that it's okay to, you know, sense things and feel things that other people might not. It really is a gift to be able to do that. So, you know, I had the joy of growing up with a mother who also believed in magic. So I grew up kind of in the sense that Carl did, and then I just never thought it was strange or weird to believe in things like that. You know, it was just kind of perfectly normal. So I didn't really question it or think twice about it. So I think the main thing that parents can do is to just not tell kids, that's not real, that's your imagination, things like that, because that can be hurtful to the child. Even if you don't, you might not believe your child, but giving your child the benefit of the doubt can help them feel more validated, and it helps spur on their imagination and their special talents.
Having been branded a child with an overactive imagination when I was very young and experiencing things that no one else was experiencing, I know how detrimental that was in terms of my personal growth and expansion. But I had the blessing of a grandfather who was very open and very spiritual, and he sort of nurtured me along and said, don't pay attention, just do what you want to do, and you know, follow your heart and see where it takes you. So I was very blessed in that way.
Right. I think it's important that sometimes all we need is for somebody to just say, I understand, and I don't think you're crazy.
That's it. That's so simple. It's really so simple. And so important, too, to nurture children that way, not just in metaphysical and magical talents, but in all talents that manifest when they're young. Because ultimately, if they're manifesting them when they're young, that potentially could be their life.
Definitely.
Now, Carl is often referred to as the father of the New Age. Why is that so?
Well, he was called that for, I think the main reason was because he basically sort of helped build up that movement. He helped birth the movement by making a space for the movement and providing information for the movement. You know, he was the one publishing most of the books on the topics. He was also a big spokesman in the media back then in the 60s and 70s. He, you know, sought out different media outlets across the country and was willing to talk openly about these things to give a voice to these movements and make a space for people that also believed in these things. So in doing that, he really helped spur the movement on by providing the information for people to learn these techniques and to share that information with others.
What was the foundation of Llewellyn Publishing, and how did Carl come to own it?
Well, the company was started by a person from Welsh named George Llewellyn, a Welsh person from Wales, obviously, named Llewellyn George. And he immigrated here as a child to Chicago, and then in his early 20s, he moved to Portland, Oregon, where he met a lady named Ida Hillary Fletcher. And this woman had the idea that she was very passionate about. She wanted to open an astrology school, and she wanted Llewellyn George to help teach at that school. But she was also very enthusiastic about that dream. So in 1901, they opened the Portland School of Astrology, founded by Ida Hillary Fletcher, and she took on Llewellyn George as a teacher of astrology there. So Llewellyn George was not happy with the astrology texts that were available at the time. They're all very overcomplicated and not many available, and just nothing really for the beginning student of astrology that was very accessible. So Llewellyn George was inspired to create his own publications to use as course materials for the students. And the woman, Miss Fletcher, that he was working with had a printing press. So they started printing out these writings of Llewellyn George's and issuing them, you know, to the classes, the students. And then they realized, well, other people will be interested in this too. So they started selling the publications under the Portland School of Astrology to start with. So that really started out Llewellyn George in the Trail of Publishing, and some of his very earliest works there went on to become Llewellyn publications that are still in existence, like the Moon Sign Book and the Planetary Daily Guide. So he was really just kind of inspired by the need to do that. So he did that, and I think it was 1912, if I'm remembering right. He decided to strike out on his own and founded the Llewellyn College of Astrology, and he continued the same publications that he was doing.
And then how did Carl get involved?
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot you asked me that part. So Carl got involved. He wasn't really sure what he wanted to do. He was in his mid-20s, and he had been working in his family's companies, which they have different pharmaceutical businesses that he was working in. And it just wasn't inspiring to him. He was a very good businessman, but it just was dull to him. He just wasn't very into it. He knew he wanted to do more. So he started toying around with different ideas. And one of his ideas was that maybe he could become a publisher. So being Carl, he decided to take out a subscription to Publishers Weekly magazine, which back then hardly nobody read that except established publishing companies, basically. But he got this magazine and he started to learn everything he could about it. And one day he saw a small classified ad for a small astrology publisher for sale. And that was Llewellyn. And so in 1960, he wrote to the person that had bought the company from Llewellyn George's estate. He had passed away in 54. And so he just made the contact and decided to make the deal. The person that owned it actually didn't want the publishing business. They just wanted the printing equipment. So Carl was able to strike a good deal, and he went out to Los Angeles to make the deal. And then he actually loaded up the inventory himself onto a freight train he hired and got it all shipped back to St. Paul, Minnesota.
And we're going to pick up that story. We're going to pick up that story after the break. My guest this evening is Melanie Marquet. She's the author of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. Melanie, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and get the book.
So you can get a copy of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit at the Llewellyn Worldwide website at llewellyn.com. It's LLEWELLYN.com.
And where can they find out more about you?
You can find me on my website, melaniemarquis.com, MelanieMarquis.
And we'll be back with more of Melanie Marquis and the story of Carl Llewellyn Weschke after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg roll showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Teens in foster care will love you, even if you don't know the lingo.
Dad bod. Noun. The result of the occasional donut always washed down with confidence.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Melanie Marquis. She's the author of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. So before the break, you started telling us about how Carl went out to California to claim the assets of Llewellyn Publishing, the former Llewellyn Publishing, and what happened?
Well, he got it all shipped back to Minnesota, and he put it in his family's business office in downtown St. Paul, and just started being a publisher, not knowing anything about it, really. But he believed in himself, and he had a vision for what he wanted to achieve. So he was able to carry out that vision.
Now, what was Carl's relationship with the burgeoning pagan and neo-pagan communities of the 1960s and 1970s like?
Well, just as he had done with the New Age movement, he did the same thing with paganism and witchcraft, which was just beginning to be talked about in America in a serious way. He gave a voice to many of these authors. Raymond Buckland was one of the first witches he published. Raymond Buckland wrote a book called Witchcraft from the Inside. And this book actually represents the first book that's written by an actual witch about actual witchcraft practices. That was a modern book that people could have access to in America, readily available. So Carl published this book. He also published an author from Kentucky, a witch named Lady Sheba. So he had some of the earliest authors of these movements. So again, it gave a voice to that. And Carl also, when he met Lady Sheba, he became inspired himself to get in the world of witchcraft. And he was actually initiated into Lady Sheba's Wiccan coven. And after that, he became a spokesperson for that movement as well. And he's credited as being St. Paul's first public witch to come out and say, I'm a witch. And he made himself very available to the public, you know, and to the media for scrutiny, for questions. He wanted everybody to know about it if they wanted to, and to know what do witches really practice and what can this do for me and why should I care. And he was willing to put himself out on a ledge to do that and be the voice for that, and also to give other people a voice and a space to come together to do that. And you know, he provided the information for all these movements. He not only published new exciting authors like Raymond Buckland and Lady Sheba, he was also reviving these old magical classic books that had gone out of print and were extremely difficult to find. You know, we take it for granted today because we have the internet, we have bookstores everywhere, but when Carl got started, there really wasn't a whole lot of information. You had a lot of out-of-print old classic occult books that were written in the 30s from some European publisher, and that's basically all there was. There wasn't really, you know, serious, accessible texts for beginners that were readily available. So Carl changed that, and by changing that, it gave people the information to be able to study these different paths of spirituality and be able to see if it called to them.
I remember searching out these books in the mid to late 60s and early 70s, and at the time there was one bookstore in New York who carried the Llewellyn books, and that was Samuel Weiser's bookstore, the occult bookstore here in Manhattan in New York. And it was very hard to find books of this nature except at that one store.
Yes, I believe that Weiser was that Samuel Weiser bookstore in New York City, that was the actual first occult bookstore that we had in this country.
Absolutely. That was a fascinating place. And I remember spending almost entire weekends browsing and looking through books and yes, buying books too. So I did invest in what I was looking at. Now, in 1964, Carl purchased the purportedly haunted Summit Avenue Mansion in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he used it as his home and also his office. He had what he described as odd experiences there. What were some of those experiences?
Oh my goodness, it's this house that he lived in. First of all, it's a beautiful, beautiful stone mansion. It's just gorgeous home that was built in the late 1800s. But this home has had ghost stories attached to it for years and years and years and years. One standout experience that Carl had is he was sitting in his office one day, and it was broad daylight, and he said he saw a man appear by the door. And this is a ghost that has been described by other visitors to the home in years past before Carl purchased it. But it was a man wearing a top hat and overcoat with long tails, which people just say that it's the spirit of a man that used to work at the art school that committed suicide, but he supposedly liked to dress up in his fancy clothes to go to the opera. So that's the clothes that he appeared in to different people that have seen him. So when Carl saw the last appearance that he made to Carl, Carl was sitting in his office in broad daylight, and he said the man appeared right by the windows, the sunlight streaming behind him in broad daylight. And he said they just looked at each other for a moment, and then the spirit just vanished and was never seen again. So that was one thing. Carl also talked about a presence that he called his friend named George, or a ghost named George. But he made it clear that he considered this entity different than from what people think of as a typical ghost. Carl thought of ghosts more like an after image, sort of like a shadow or an echo, but not like a conscious spirit. But he said he did encounter a presence in this house called that he called George. And, you know, I don't think he was ever certain himself exactly what or who George was, but he felt like he could communicate with this entity and ask George questions, and that George would write a response for him, you know, and kind of lead him and guide him. And he said that after moving from that house, that this presence called George followed him to every house he moved in since. So that was definitely his favorite spirit of the house, was his friend named George.
It almost sounds like George was his spirit guide.
Yeah, he even said he was like, if George might be a ghost, it might be my own higher consciousness, it might be a spirit guide. He's like, I don't really know, but I just know when I ask a question, I seem to get an answer, and it's a good answer.
It's nice to have a friend like George, I tell you that.
Yeah, I always wondered if it might have been Llewellyn George.
Oh,
and
he
neither confirmed or denied that suspicion, so
that was a great question, though. That's a fabulous question. In 1970, Carl opened the Gnostica bookstore in Minneapolis, as well as the Gnostica School for Self-Development, based obviously on Gnostic teachings. Tell us about these, please.
Well, actually, you know, you were talking about Samuel Weiser being the occult bookstore in New York City, and that was the country's first. So in 1970, Minneapolis did not have any sort of metaphysical or occult bookstore. So Carl decided to open one, and he opened it as the country's largest occult bookstore of the day. They stocked more than 100,000 books in the store. So it was chock full of books and also all kinds of supplies from crystals and, you know, meditation mats and different things like that. He really, again, just wanted to, he was very passionate about giving people the information that they needed to learn and to grow. So he was offering not only Llewellyn books, but books from any other publishers he could find that he thought would be of value to somebody. So he got up a huge, huge quantity of selection of books that he made available to people, with the idea that this would be a place of knowledge where people could come together and learn. And the idea of the school just kind of naturally blossomed out of that, out of his desire for this to be a place of learning and community.
Now, he was also the founder of Gnosticon, the Gnostic Aquarian Festivals held in Minneapolis. What was the purpose of these festivals?
To make community for people, to give people a space to come together and to make it meaningful to the public, these new movements that were going on, because this was all new. It was very, very new and very exciting to people to realize, you know, what some people really believe in magic, and, you know, people believe in these different alternate spiritualities that aren't mainstream, and, you know, and other people believe this too, and there's ways to learn about it. It was exciting times for people. So Carl really wanted to show the impact that this was having in the country. And he described it as that people were looking for more personal meaning in their spirituality. People no longer wanted to, they didn't want to have to go through the priest, through the church, through some hierarchy of teachers to tell them what they wanted to know. They wanted to be empowered to develop their own forms of spirituality that were personally meaningful for them. And Carl wanted to give people space to do this. So he created this festival to bring together, well, also to showcase his authors and to bring together other experts of magic and witchcraft together in one place so that people could come out and learn from that, and also make a public gathering and say, hey, all of us people here, we're not insane, and we all happen to be witches and pagans. And, you know, that's, again, something that we take for granted today, because there's all kinds of spiritual and pagan festivals today. But that really was one of the first in the country that was publicized, that was large. So it really made an impact and was really the forerunner to today's festivals.
Does that festival still continue on, or has it changed or gone away?
No, he did it until 1976, when his family started growing and he just had to pull back on some of his different obligations. But it wasn't too long after that when other different festivals started to spring up in different places around the country, something he definitely inspired people to start their own gatherings.
Now, speaking of gatherings, you have one coming up with Denver Pagans next month, correct?
Yes, we do. We have our Denver Pagan Pride Day Festival, and Pagan Pride Day festivals are held all over the country, and in fact, in many countries in the world. in August and September to help celebrate pagan religions and help to just fight the misconceptions about them and to show people the diversity of pagan paths and that we're peaceful, loving people, and we just happen to practice a different form of spirituality. So we do these festivals every year as a way to educate the public and also to just get together with one another and celebrate our paths and share information. So yes, we have our Denver Pagan Pride Festival. It's coming up Saturday, October 6th, and we're having it at the Althea Center for Engaged Spirituality here in Denver. And if anyone wants any more information about that, they can go to denverpaganpride.org.
Say that one more time, denverpaganpride.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And what else can they find at that website?
Excuse me, what?
What else can they find on that website?
You can find what information we have about our classes that we're having this year. We have a diverse selection of teachers from all sorts of different pagan paths of spirituality to come and share their teachings. We also have lots of vendors and crafters. It's a chance for local artists to come out and show off their wares. So we're really excited about it.
My guest this evening is Melanie Marquis. She's the author of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. We'll be back with more of Melanie after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Why should you volunteer with Meals on Wheels?
I'll come to the door with one meal and I'll walk away with a full heart.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Melanie Marquis. She's the author of Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit. Melanie, in 1973, Carl helped to form and organize the Council of American Witches and became its first chairman. During his brief tenure as chairman, he drafted the now famous 13 Principles of Belief statement, which he considered his proudest accomplishment on behalf of the craft. What are those principles?
Well, the first principle, and I think one of the most important ones, talks about how witches live attuned with the cycles of Earth. We practice rituals to attune ourselves to the seasons and to the moon. So that's a very important principle, to just to live in harmony with the flows and tides of nature rather than to swim against those things. It's important for us as witches to honor seasonal changes and honor the different phases and cycles of the moon. Other principles talk about things like gender equality, which is very important in witchcraft. The belief that both genders are equal and that femininity and masculinity actually manifests in all people as a polarity of the universe, that it can be utilized in magic. There's also principles relating to sex positivity and being positive about our sexuality and celebrating that and acknowledging that as a magical force in the universe. And another principle I think is very important. This states basically that witches don't worship an entity known as the devil or Satan, as described in Christianity. We just don't do that. That is not what witchcraft is. So at the time when they drafted these principles, it was important to get these ideas out there because, as I said, it was, you know, a burgeoning movement. It was just starting out. So there were lots of different people that were, you know, maybe coming forward and saying witchcraft is this or this or this or this. And, you know, and there are lots of people that were concerned about potential bad publicity or misinformation that was getting out there. So while Carl did actually do most of the drafting and creation of these principles that were then adopted, and he actually did it in one night, basically, to come up with the first draft of all these. But they were actually unanimously voted on by a council of 73 different individuals that came from all different magical paths, from Gardnerian Wicca to Discordianism and modern Druidry. So they weren't all, you know, we wouldn't even classify all these people today as witches by today's definitions. But these back then, these were all principles that all these people that practice these different forms of paganism and magical spirituality could agree on.
Now, these principles were so unique and so pagan positive that they found a strange home, didn't they?
Yes, actually, Carl worked hard with, I believe it was J. Gordon Melton helped him to get these principles in the Army Chaplain's Handbook to give the Army, you know, a way to, you know, practice to honor the spirituality of veterans who practiced paganism and witchcraft. So that was a very important step to be able to accomplish that, because it helped to legitimize paganism and witchcraft to the government and gave veterans who practice a way to be able to express that and to have their wishes be honored.
And it shows the Army and the government's openness to be willing to entertain the beliefs of all people.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Something we could definitely use today, couldn't we?
Yes, we could.
Absolutely. Now, Carl was also the seventh past Grand Master of the Ordo Aurum Solis, which I believe translates the Order of the Golden Sun. What part does this organization play in the Western mystery tradition?
Well, as far as I understand, I'm not a part of this order, so I don't really know too many details about it, but I know it's an initiatory tradition. I mean, you can get initiated into this style of magic, the magic is based on Mediterranean magic from ancient Greece and also Thurgic practices from Egypt, and it's kind of a blend of these, and this tradition was started in 1897 in England, and it's continued on to this day as a very important initiatory branch of Western mystery tradition. So it still gives people a way to learn these practices and to be a part of a continuing long-held tradition.
For listeners not familiar with initiatory orders, what is an initiation?
Well, it's different things in different orders, but it basically just kind of means you've become an official part of this group. Basically like a training system. Like if you're doing karate and you worked your way up to becoming a black belt, when you got the black belt, that would be like the initiation.
Now, you had mentioned that Carl published his first book when he was how old, 74?
Well, he published his books, yeah, when he was, I think, 78 or 79, his first official book came out. But actually, he shockingly wrote a book when he was 24 in 1954 called The Science of Feeling Fine, that it was actually his first one. He self-published it himself. He said he wrote it soon after his grandfather passed away, and he said he never knew where the information came from, but it did, and he got it all down in about 2 weeks, which I find curious is because his grandfather actually wrote a book called Overcoming Sleeplessness that he wrote to promote this pharmaceutical business, really, but it was a book about wellness and the importance of a good night's sleep. So Carl wrote this book, The Science of Feeling Fine, that's basically about the importance of wellness and whole body balance with that mind-body-spirit connection. So in this book, I see echoes of his grandfather's words. It's very interesting. But, you know, with all this, he wrote this book, and Carl also, he was the earliest, when he first bought the company, he was the only writer for the annuals that they published. He was their main writer. So he wrote a lot of the content for the books. He wrote lots of articles, lots of magazines over the years, but he never considered himself an author. Even with that, like later in life, he always talked about how he had always wanted to be an author, but he got sidetracked by publishing. So finally, when he was about 78, he had the chance to finally become an author and really finally consider himself a writer. So then he finally did publish his own books through Llewellyn at that time and created some amazing, amazing works in his last few years on Earth. I mean, his books that he wrote with his co-author, Dr. Joe H. Slate, they measure over a foot of my bookshelf space. They're just gigantic, enormous books, because I think through his lifetime, he amassed all this head full of knowledge about all these spiritual matters and about metaphysics. And when he finally started sharing them, it's just like a flood of information. These books are treasures that he's left us to learn from.
Now, what listeners and readers may not be aware of is that Carl was a staunch supporter of racial equality and civil rights. How did this advocacy manifest for him?
Yes, he was very, very passionate about this. Again, I think it had a lot to do with his mystical, magical grandfather, Charles Weschke, who was not only vice president of the American Theosophical Society, but he had actually been one of the founding members of the NAACP in Minnesota. So Carl joined the organization the same year that his grandfather passed away. So I think that he felt compelled to help carry on that legacy. And it just kind of came together for him because around this time, a woman named Bertha, a black woman that worked for Carl at his company, invited him to come to a meeting in St. Paul at the NAACP. So Carl went to the meeting and he heard all about the crisis in housing, because back then, and well, even today, sadly, people experience discrimination in the housing market. It had reached crisis proportion at this time in 1954 in St. Paul, where people couldn't rent properties. There were very few properties that were open to non-whites, that people wouldn't rent to immigrants. They wouldn't rent to black people. So these people had nowhere to go, nowhere to live. And Carl was a very firm believer in the comforts of home. He loved home comforts, and he believed in everybody's potential and everybody's right to achieve their full potential. So, and he was also a problem solver. Whenever he saw something that could be improved, he always felt a personal responsibility for solving that problem. So basically, he went to this first meeting and realized that there was a ton of work to do. So he just took it upon himself to be a part of doing it, basically. And he joined up and became very, very heavily involved from about 1954 into the mid to late 60s. And he also joined the ACLU and Urban League. So I was shocked in my research to realize the depth of commitment and the breadth of work that he did through that, because I had heard it mentioned that he did civil rights work, but I had no idea like how much he actually did. He gave countless speeches about, you know, fair housing and, you know, as the NAACP did a lot of fundraising to fight school, you know, to try to support a quicker school integration and things like that. So he really did a lot of important work with that. That's one thing I'm really excited about sharing in this book, because it really is untold stories. I managed to dig up lots of, you know, old speeches and kind of retell the story of the civil rights struggle and what it was like in Minnesota during those years. It's kind of telling for the whole country as a whole.
And Carl's life is really illustrated in your book with more than 100 photos detailing many of the things that we've been talking about tonight. What would you like readers to take away from your book on Carl?
Well, I would hopefully that they'll take away that they too can do more, that they can be more. Like, just as Carl was never satisfied with that he was doing enough, he always wanted to do more. He also always wanted to inspire people to be their best. So I'm hoping that in reading the stories in this book, that people will be inspired that they can do their best too, that it's never too late to try something new, and that every one of us has this great, wonderful potential that we may not be fully utilizing. And Carl wanted people to embrace their own power and to make good on the power that we are given. So I hope that this book will inspire people to do that. And also I hope it will inspire people to pick up some of these numerous fantastic books that he wrote later in life, because they really are just full of just gems of knowledge that I feel everyone can benefit from.
And I am inspired by our wonderful guest, Melanie Marquis. Melanie, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book, Carl Llewellyn Weschke, pioneer and publisher of Body, Mind, and Spirit, and find out more about you and your work.
You can get the book at llewellyn.com, Llewellyn, or on Amazon or at your local bookstore. And you can find me at my website, melaniemarquis.com.
And Melanie, thank you so much for joining us on Destination. Thank you so much for joining us on Destination Unlimited this evening. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.